ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Chapter 6, entitled Conversation Between Narad and Vyasadev. Text number 10. Tadatarnaham Ishasya Bhaktanam Sham Abhivshataha Anugraham Manyamanaha Pratishtham Desham Uttaram Tadatanaham Ishasya Bhaktanam Sham Abhivshataha Anugraham Manyamanaha Pratishtham Desham Uttaram Tadatanaham Ishasya Bhaktanam Sham Abhivshataha Anugraham Manyamanaham Manyamanaham Pratishtham Disham Uttaram
Tada
At that time
Tad
That
Aham
I
Ishasya
Of the Lord
Bhaktanam
Of the devotees
Sham
Mercy
Abhip
Sataha
Desiring
Anugraham
Special
benediction
Manyamanaha
Thinking
in that way
Pratishtham
Departed
Disham
Uttaram
In the northern
direction
Translation
by His Divine Grace
Srila Prabhupada
I took
this as the special
mercy of the Lord
who always
desires
benediction for his
devotees.
And so thinking,
I started
for the north.
Purport.
Confidential
devotees of the Lord
see in every
step a
benedictory
direction
of the Lord.
What
is considered to be
an odd
or difficult
moment
in the mundane
sense is
accepted as
special mercy
of the Lord.
Mundane
prosperity
is a kind of
material fever,
and
by the grace of the Lord,
the
temperature of this
material fever
is gradually
diminished,
and spiritual
health is obtained
step by step.
Mundane
people
misunderstand
it.
Om Agyana
Vinirandasya
Gyananjana
Shalakaya
Chakshur
Malitam
Yena
Tasmay
Shri Gurave
Namaha
Jai Shri
Krishna Chaitanya
Prabhu
Nityananda
Shri
Advaita
Gadadhara
Shri Vasari
Gaura Bhakta
Vrinda
Hare
Krishna
Hare
Krishna
Krishna
Krishna Hare
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 Rama
Hare
Rama
Hare
Hare
So, in this, we are in the beginning of chapter number 6, Conversation Between Narada and Vyas. So, as we heard in the beginning text, how Vyasadeva asked Narada Muni what he did after the in his previous life, after the Bhakti Vedantas had departed, after his being initiated, what did he do after that? Because we discussed last time that we should not be interested in the past life of a devotee. What is more important is what they are doing in the spiritual life and what they are doing after initiation. So here Vyasadeva asked that question and Narada Muni starts to describe what took place after the Bhakti Vedanta's life. So of course at that time Narada Muni was only 5 years old. So he was quite a young boy. And even in that age we see children have a very strong attraction towards sports or playing or frivolous activities. But as we'll hear in the coming verses, that Narad Muni had no such attraction. So he was quite special. And even at such a young age, he was, as we have heard, he only had his mother. He didn't have a father. So, because he didn't know who his father was. So he was only mainly protected by his mother. And naturally, he was bound by the tie of affection by his mother. So he was, and it's quite natural in that stage of our life that we are very strongly bound by this tie of affection. Because children also need that love, care and attention. And because his mother had only one child, and that was a son, so she was more or less dependent on her son for her future protection. Because we understand from the Vedic text that a woman is always, in all conditions, she is protected, she is dependent. So whether in her childhood she is protected by her father, when she gets married she is protected by her husband, and when in a later stages she is protected by her sons. So therefore, that's one reason why in the Vedic civilization everyone wanted a son. It's mainly for this reason. Because most often the men would actually take vanaprastha or sannyas, and then the wife would be protected by her sons, grown-up sons. So also it's mentioned that's why she also very strongly bound him by the tie of affection. And as in the previous verse, it's mentioned that once upon a time, my poor mother, when going out one night to milk a cow, was bitten on the leg by a serpent influenced by supreme time. So we hear from the previous text how that Narad Muni's mother, one day she was going to milk the cow at night, and it happened that a snake bit her and she quit her body. So now, from the mundane point of view, this is a very terrible situation. This is the worst thing that could happen to someone, because he's only 5 years old. So he has, you can imagine a 5 year old child. A 5 year old child is completely dependent on his mother for everything. And in this case, doesn't even have a father. So the mother's gone, is like, what to do? And he's only 5 years old. So it's from the mundane point of view, this is like the most most terrible thing to happen. But as is mentioned in the purport, that confidential devotees of the Lord see in every step a benedictory direction of the Lord. So because Narad Muni was a confidential devotee, even in this situation, he actually saw a benediction of the Lord. So this is what actually distinguishes an ordinary devotee from an advanced or a confidential devotee. So a confidential devotee will see in every step the hand of the Lord, and they use that as an impetus for spiritual advancement. And Prabhupada mentioned, what is considered to be an odd or difficult moment in the mundane sense is accepted as special mercy of the Lord. So we see by constitution we are spirit souls and we are part and parcel of Krishna. So in every step of our life we are actually dependent upon Krishna by constitution. So and by constitution we are servant of Krishna. Jivara Swarupai Krishnera Nityadas. So you see, in the spiritual world or even in the material world, when a person is fully Krishna conscious, they are actually fully dependent on the mercy of the Lord for their protection. They are not dependent on their own endeavors. And we also hear that in the prayers of Queen Kunti, where she says, "Oh my Lord, you have executed all duties yourself. Are you leaving us today, though we are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us, now when all kings are at enmity with us?" So we even see in the prayers of exalted devotees how they are actually dependent on the protection of the Lord. Because we see in the lives of the Pandavas, in every step of their life, they were protected by the Lord. And they were fully dependent on the protection of the Lord. So, the five Pandavas, they were bereft of their father. Their father Pandu had died when they were quite... He died in his early age. And then they were mainly protected by Kunti Devi. And Kunti Devi and by Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra took, he took them under his shelter. But still he wanted his sons, headed by Duryodhan, to rule the kingdom. So they were always conspiring of different ways to eliminate the Pandavas so that the Kurus could rule, headed by Duryodhan. So in this way they tried in so many ways, the various plots they hatched to eliminate the Pandavas. So we see the Pandavas, they were... Bhima was poisoned by a cake. He was given a cake. He was poisoned and they threw him in the river. Tied him with ropes and threw him in the river. And they were put in the house of Shalak, where they were tried to be burnt alive. Then Draupadi was attempted to be stripped naked. They were defeated in the gambling match. And then they were exiled. And even while they were in exile, there were various attacks on them. So in all circumstances, and then even Durvasa Muni came once. Duryodhan intrigued with Durvasa Muni, because he knew Durvasa Muni can be easily pleased and he can be easily displeased. And Durvasa Muni had 10,000 disciples. So wherever he went, he used to go with his huge entourage of disciples. It's like when the president of America comes, and then Barack Obama comes, and then there's a huge entourage who will also come with him. His security guards. Like when he came in Australia, there were like hundreds of security guards deployed, and the secret services came before him. And a few. So there's a lot of people, ministers. So with Durvasa Muni, 10,000 disciples would follow him wherever he went. So Duryodhan intrigued with him that he knew that Draupadi had a special... she had a special benediction that before, once she takes a meal, then, what was the benediction? Then she cannot... Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, she had this boon that she could feed as many people as long as she didn't take a meal. So, Duryodhan intrigued with Durvasa Muni that he goes at a time when she has actually taken the meals. So first she had fed her five husbands and then she took her meal. And at that point of time, Durvasa Muni came and Maharaj Yudhishthir very nicely greeted Durvasa Muni and offered a nice reception. And it's customary if a guest comes in your house, as we were hearing previously in one of the Bhagavatam classes, that especially the duty of Grihasthas to actually feed the guest, even if it is an unexpected guest, even if it's your enemy. So suppose this is the Vedic culture in which an enemy is also made very comfortable. That enemy also forgets that they are the enemy of this person. Like we see in the battle of Kurukshetra, during the daytime, the Kauravas and the Pandavas would fight like anything. And in the evening, they would go in each other's camps and, you know, talk and joke and exchange meals and very pleasant exchanges. But the next day again, they would be fighting. So, these days this is very hard to understand. So, Maharaj Yudhishthir, he said, okay, you take a bath in the river, by that time your lunch will be ready for you, yourself and your 10,000 disciples. So you can imagine cooking a feast for 10,000 people. For 1,000 people is hard enough. But this is like 10,001 people have come. So then Maharaj Yudhishthir was in great anxiety what to do. And because he knew he's a sage, and if I don't feed him, there will be a terrible calamity falling upon us. So and And Draupadi was also in great anxiety, and she started to cry in that situation. It's quite normal. So she started to cry, and then, well, Prabhupada actually mentions that, and then she actually takes shelter of the Lord. So in this stage we can also see that she's very dependent on the protection of the Lord. So she was actually praying to the Lord, and then suddenly Krishna appeared from nowhere. And then Krishna said, "Don't worry, just show me that pot of rice or pot of prasadam." And then the Buddha said, "It's empty." And he said, "No, there's something there." And when he had, when Krishna had that tiny bit of remaining prasadam, that by his having, all the three worlds were satisfied. And then Durvasa Muni and his disciples in the river nearby, they felt fully satisfied. They were actually feeling full, as if they've had a feast. And then they were thinking, now, if we go to see Maharaj Yudhishthira, you know, he's prepared a big feast for us. So now, if we go there and we don't honor it, they were feeling like extremely full, you know, like in a feast, on a feast day you overeat. And then if someone says, "Here, one more gulab," it's like, though you like the gulab very much, it's like, "No, I can't have even a drop of water." So they were extremely full. And so they said, you know, we won't go there, otherwise it's a great offense. So in this way they were saved by the mercy of the Lord. So Queen Kunti also, we see in a prayer, she actually remembers the protection of the Lord. Even Arjuna remembers the protection of the Lord. So in this way we see, by constitution, we are actually dependent on the mercy of the Lord in every step of our life. But when we are contaminated by matter, or when we come to the material world, then we have this false sense of independence. So in the material world, everyone is trying to become independent of the laws of nature. So in the material world, it is actually, if you say, "I'm dependent on someone," that is considered to be a sign of weakness. That's like the most unfortunate thing to happen to someone. So materially speaking, if you're actually considered to be a parasite, if you're dependent on somebody, isn't it? Like, you know, if you, you know, your family takes care of you till 18 or 19, then you grow up, then you are actually, it is actually expected of you to become independent and stand on your legs, and that you even support your family, or actually, you know, just do your own thing. If you are dependent on your parents for the rest of your life, you are like considered to be a parasite. So, and even people view the Hare Krishna movement, the devotees, as parasites, because we are dependent on them. You know, how many times we have heard that, you know, when we are doing books or Harinams, they'll say, you know, "Get a job." Because what they are thinking is that they are simply living on the taxpayers' money. These Hare Krishnas, all day and night, they are up and down chanting and dancing on the street. And they look very happy. And, you know, they have their restaurant and they live in a temple, have a good life. But this is at our expense. You know, we are working so hard. And then we are paying our tax, and they are not paying the tax, and they sometimes even claim dole on top of that. So this is, they actually see us as dependent on them, and they view us as parasites. But of course, devotees are not parasites. Though devotees are dependent on the mercy of the Lord, they are not like parasites. Parasite is someone who is just living at the expense of others. They don't want to do anything, but they just want to live at the expense. That's like that's a parasite. It just keeps sucking the blood from a person. So, but in the material world, the more we are independent, that is considered to be the more you're progressive in life, the more you're strong. That's a sign of strength. But if you're dependent, that's a sign of weakness. And we see even advancement of material science is more, the underlying current in that is they are actually trying to be independent of the laws of nature. So that's why we see, like in with the advancement of science, whether it is in the field of medicine or astronomy or you name any technology, the underlying current is actually they're trying to be independent of the laws of nature. So we see the when we accept a material body, we are actually not independent. Though in because of this material disease, every one of us is thinking we are independent. But in every stage of our life, we are dependent on someone. We are not even independent in achieving happiness. Even to achieve happiness, we are dependent on someone. But Krishna is actually fully independent. Krishna is Atma Ram. Krishna is fully self-satisfied. He is not dependent on any external situation to find satisfaction. But for us, in every stage of our life, we are dependent on someone. So like when we are a child, we are dependent on our parents. They look after us and we grow. So and you can see how much a child is dependent on his or her mother. And then as we grow up, then we are dependent on our friends. You know, if we don't have a good friend circle, then we can't be happy. You know, we need that good peer group. And then as we grow up more, then we are dependent on a wife or a girlfriend. And you can see some people, they're always looking for that right person in their life. They're like 40 or 50, they're still searching for that right person. So in other words, they're dependent on someone for their happiness. And they're dependent on so many kinds of facilities provided by the government. We are dependent on animals. We are dependent on the cow. So we are dependent on the demigods for providing different resources. So in this way, in every step of our life, we are actually dependent. And then on top of us, we have various kinds of authorities, no matter what field of life we are in or what stage of life we are in. So in every stage of life, we see we are actually dependent. But because of this illusory covering, we are thinking that in spite of all these dependencies and all these laws of nature which are enforced upon us, we are thinking we are fully independent. So that is the influence of Maya. So to the degree we are influenced by the illusory energy, to that degree we will actually claim to be independent of the Lord. But to the degree we are Krishna conscious, to that degree we will be dependent on the mercy and protection of the Lord. So we won't think that whatever we are doing, it is because of our own prowess. We'll actually give credit to Guru and Gauranga for our achievements in devotional service. And here in this verse we see how Narad Muni is actually dependent on the Lord, though he's only 5 years old. Like at the age of five, how much is a child dependent on the mother? But Narad Muni took this as a special mercy of the Lord. He saw the hand of the Lord in this situation. What if this happened to us? What would we do? Sorry? So, go to Krishna? Yeah, it's very nice. So such kind of situations actually test our faith every now and then. What if this happened to us? So this is what the materialists are saying. They say, okay, even if you propose, you say intelligent design is there. Behind the creation there is intelligent design. Okay, fine. If intelligent design is there, then why is God so cruel? Why are there so many problems in the world? This is the argument material scientists take, or the evolutionists take, or even the common man will take. If God is there, then how come there's so many problems? How come there's so much evil in the world? You see, children at a very young age, they're dying due to hunger and poverty. And there's so much poverty in the world. And there's such environmental crisis. There's so many wars fought over religion. So how come you can say God is there? And on top of that, you know, you're a devotee, how could this happen to you? You know, you believe in God, so why did God take away your mother? Or why, when the 9/11, when the Twin Towers crashed, a lot of people who were theists, they were actually questioning this. His Holiness Devamitra Swami, in one of the retreats, I can't remember the name of the documentary, but he showed, I think it was Faith and Faith at Ground Zero, something like that. He showed in one of the farm retreats at New Nandagram. And he showed how that in such kind of situations, our faith is actually tested in Krishna consciousness. So many Christians, they actually became atheists. So even many priests, they lost faith in God. They thought, you know, we are God-loving people, we are God-fearing people. And how did this happen to us? The Twin Towers crashed. And these were nice people in there, you know. They didn't do anything wrong. So what if something like this happens to us? Or say, you know, we are practicing Krishna consciousness and then we lose, hope it doesn't happen to anyone, or we lose a family, or we lose our arm, you know, we lose our leg in an accident, or we are involved in a car crash. So then actually at that point of time, our faith in Krishna consciousness will be tested. And because we are living in the material world, the nature of the material world is agitation. Something always bound to happen. So sooner or later, this is going to happen. So we have to actually strengthen our faith till we encounter that kind of situation. So that's when you'll see, as is mentioned here, the ordinary devotees and the confidential devotees. So those who are confidential devotees, or they'll actually see the hand of the Lord in that situation, and they'll see that situation as an impetus for spiritual advancement. Through that situation, they'll actually come closer to Krishna. And even it is, there's this verse in Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada would very often quote that. Very famous verse. It is Canto 10, Chapter 88. Where is it? If you read the Prabhupada Leelamrita, even Prabhupada, he quotes that verse, and he's by showing how Krishna is actually involved in his life. Yeah, it's Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Yasyaham Anu Grinami Harishye Tad Dhanam Shanai Tato Adhamam Tyajanti Asya Svajana Dukha Dukhitam. So Krishna, personality of God, says, If I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. So this is Krishna. So this is what we have signed up for. So if you want the favor of the Lord, do we really want the favor of the Lord? If we want the favor of the Lord, Krishna is saying, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. And then he suffers one distress after another. So this is Krishna. And then also we see in the 8th canto, in the pastime of Bali Maharaj, where Prahlad Maharaj says, "My Lord, it is your Lordship who gave his Bali the very great opulence of the post of heavenly king. And now, today, it is you who have taken it all away. I think you have acted with equal beauty in both ways. Because his exalted position as King of Heaven was putting him in the darkness of ignorance, you have done him a very merciful favor by taking away all his opulence." So we see in this way that devotees will actually see this as the favor of the Lord, as a special benediction of the Lord. And actually, for a devotee, once we sign up in Krishna consciousness, once we start chanting Hare Krishna and show an interest in Krishna, then Krishna actually interferes in a karma. Then Krishna's hand is involved in our life. His direct hand is involved. But till we become a... If we are not a devotee, then we are simply under the modes of nature. And then the laws of nature directed by the modes are actually acting upon us. So whatever is happening to us is more or less because of a karma. And in that karma we have some tiny free will. But once we sign up and we take bhakti seriously, then Krishna actually intervenes in a karma, even in the life of a new devotee. From in all stages of different levels of devotees, Krishna will actually interfere in their life to bring that devotee closer to Him, because that's what Krishna wants, and that's why the material world is facilitated and different incarnations are sent and prophets are sent and the scriptures are sent to bring the living entity back to Godhead. So if one shows some slight interest, even if it's a neophyte, Krishna is going to intervene in their life. But Krishna will actually deprive us of our opulences according to our level of faith also. Krishna will do all these adjustments according to our faith. But still, we are living in the material world. Anything drastic can happen. So we have to be prepared for that. We see even in the life of Maharaj Parikshit, something similar happened. Like we see with Narad Muni, even at such a young age, he took full shelter of the Lord. He saw this as a special benediction where he can become fully dependent on the Lord, because his dependency on his mother was coming in the way. So Krishna wanted to take that away. So now a mundane person will say, you know, what kind of God is this? Yeah. So you're suffering. You know, you are actually suffering in this situation. And many people actually challenge devotees like that also. And they themselves lose faith in the whole thing. But this is all because of lack of knowledge. Lack of genuine spiritual knowledge. Krishna conscious knowledge. So we see even in the life of Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was the grandson of Arjuna. And the Pandavas are like his forefathers. So he's coming from a very, very exalted line where the personality of Godhead was acting as the servant of his devotees. And even Maharaj Parikshit, one of his names is Vishnu Rath, which means he himself was protected by the Lord in the womb. So it is not an ordinary person. So Maharaj Parikshit was protected in the womb and he took birth. And then he was searching after the personality of Godhead. That's why he's called Parikshit. And he was a Rajarshi, in other words, a saintly king. He was a first class devotee. And in his kingdom, everyone was happy to the degree that no one even felt the threefold miseries. There was no anxieties of the mind. Everyone was very healthy. People could see the demigods in various yagyas. That was his potency. Ordinarily, a person cannot see the demigods. But people with their ordinary vision, they could see the demigods due to the potency of the king. And the earth was producing enough resources. Everything was perfect. But even with such a person who was fully God conscious, he was cursed to die in 7 days. And he also took that as the benediction of the Lord. So we know the pastime of Maharaj Parikshit. By providence, he was hunting in the forest. And because he was hunting, he got very hungry and thirsty. Though he's a very first-class devotee, he won't be disturbed by material tribulations. But at that time, his mind was agitated. And he was extremely hungry and thirsty. And he was looking for a reservoir of water. And then he happened to come in the ashram of the famous Shamika Rishi. So then he entered the hermitage of Shamika Rishi. And he saw the sage sitting in meditation. His eyes closed and matted hair, long hair. He was wearing deer skin. And he asked the sage for some water. You know, that's, if someone comes to your home, it is etiquette. Even if we are very poor, it is the etiquette to, if someone comes to your place, you give them a mat to sit on. This is the bare minimum for someone who is very poor. Give a glass of water, say a few sweet words. Give them a place to sit and, you know, speak nicely to them. This is the general etiquette. So, and because Maharaj Parikshit, he's a king. And a king is meant to be honored. And especially a Rajarshi, a very saintly king. So there was nothing wrong on his part on asking just a cup of water. So, and but because Shamika Rishi, he was in very, very deep meditation, he did not notice the presence of the king. And therefore, Maharaj Parikshit, he felt insulted. And ordinarily, because he's a first-class devotee, you know, such things should not agitate a devotee. But in this case, it's mentioned that because Maharaj Parikshit was actually covered by Yoga Maya, by the influence of the Lord, he was bewildered. And what he did, he saw a dead snake lying around. He picked up that snake and he garlanded the sage with that snake. So it's a very, very minor offense, nothing serious. He didn't, nothing wrong actually what he did. And then he left. And even on the way back to his palace, he was contemplating, you know, is this the right thing I did? Maybe he was actually in meditation. Or is he pretending to be in meditation? Was he pretending? So because he's a nice devotee, he was actually considering the consequences of his actions. And then the son of Shamika was Shringi. He was a 12-year-old boy. So because he was 12, though he was 12 years old, he was the son of a Brahmana. He had all the powers of a Brahmana due to his brahmacharya, it's mentioned, and due to the brahminical training in that time. Even a boy of 12 years was very, very powerful. But because of inexperience or immaturity, he was not very intelligent. In other words, he didn't know when to use his powers. So out of lack of culture, because of lack of brahminical culture, it is mentioned that Kali, who was told to reside in four places, which is where there's meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling, and even in gold, took this opportunity of a lack of culture to infiltrate. So this is all by the will of the Lord, because Kali had to enter, and Maharaj Parikshit, Krishna wanted Maharaj Parikshit to come back to Godhead, so he had to create some situation. And so then Kali took that opportunity of entering, and then Shringi, he actually cursed Maharaj Parikshit. He said, 7 days from now you will be bitten by a snake bird. He said, this most wretched of the Kshatriya order or something. And we can see how much he was very degraded in culture, because he actually called, he was talking to his friend and he said that this Maharaj Parikshit, he's a Kshatriya, and he's a Kshatriya is like a watchdog. He was calling him a dog. And he said a dog is meant to, you know, he's like a watchdog. A dog, you know, we don't let a dog in your house. What to speak of eating from the same plate. So he said he's like a dog. And therefore, how dare he enter the house of a Brahmana, someone who's higher than him. And not only enter the house, and then he wants to drink from the same cup of, you know, same pot. You don't feed your dog from the same plate. So, of course, you know, he got everything upside down. And this is because of pride, and Kali took that advantage, and Kali entered. And that's how Kali entered, the age of Kali began. And then Maharaj Parikshit was cursed, and Maharaj Parikshit, when Maharaj Parikshit received the news, actually Shamika Rishi himself came to the palace, and with great regret, he actually conveyed the news that this is what my son has done. And Maharaj Parikshit was jubilant. He actually took that as good news. And what Maharaj Parikshit thought, that this is the hand, he saw that as the hand of the Lord, and that Krishna wants him to be free from worldly affairs. Though Maharaj Parikshit was a first class devotee himself. And he thought, okay, and Prabhupada mentions in the purport that, and he says, yeah, Maharaj Parikshit mentions that, you know, though I have transcendental attachment to the Lord, but still he mentions that though he's trained to develop transcendental attachment for the Lord, though he's entangled in family affairs. And because the Lord has created a fearful situation, now he'll become detached. So we know Maharaj Parikshit, he was involved in worldly affairs in the sense he was running a kingdom. If you run a kingdom, there's a lot of politics, you know, there's a lot of people who are envious, you know, people are fighting for facilities, you know, this one has got that, you know, I haven't got this, this and that, and there's so many problems in the kingdom. Or he's dealing with his field of activity is very, very wide. So, and he saw that as an opportunity to retire from worldly affairs. Though he sees everything in connection to the Lord, he sees everything in relationship to the Lord. That's the symptom of a Mahabhagavat. They see the Lord in everything and everything in the Lord. So, still he saw, okay, good opportunity to be detached. You know, and he put Janak Maharaj, enthroned him as the king. And then he just sat on the banks of the Ganges or the Yamuna, because Yamuna flows in Hastinapur, or now it's New Delhi. So he just sat there, and all the sages came on the pretext of a place of pilgrimage, and Shukdev Goswami came, and then he asked Shukdev Goswami, please outline the path of perfection. And in this way we see that even a devotee, they see in every step as a benediction of the Lord. So in the Shastra, this is only two examples. If we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are so many examples. You have Dhruva Maharaj, you have Maharaj Yudhishthir. There are so many examples where Prahlad Maharaj saw that as arrangement of the Lord, and he's taking full shelter of the Lord. So in every step, we see how devotees will see it as the arrangement of the Lord. So we also have to learn in our spiritual practice, in our life, that whatever is happening, whether it's materially speaking good or bad, that is actually the arrangement of the Lord, and we should use that to become stronger in the Krishna consciousness. And also another point is, as is mentioned here in the purport, that mundane prosperity is a kind of material fever. And by the grace of the Lord, the temperature of this material fever is gradually diminished, and the spiritual health is obtained step by step. Mundane people misunderstand it. So we see that Manigriva and Nalakuera, they were actually infatuated by material opulences. Even we see Bali Maharaj, he was infatuated with material opulence. And Krishna gave him all the three worlds, and then Krishna took it away because he was puffed up. So we see sometimes facilities are given to us, to devotees, to expand the preaching. And when we render devotional service, naturally facilities will come after some time in the form of prestige, recognition, material facilities. But if we become carried away by all that, then Krishna sees that my devotee is becoming proud, and then Krishna takes it away, and that's the favor of the Lord. We see even with Indra, when Indra became proud of his position, and he thought he's all in all. You know, he's the supreme Lord, and everyone is his servitor. And because the Brajvasis, they didn't give their share of sacrifice to him, they gave it to this Govardhan. So then he became puffed up, and then Krishna smashed his pride. So in this way we see that the Lord takes a special interest in his devotees, and when we become proud, then the Lord takes it away. Or sometimes for advanced devotees, though they're not puffed up, still the Lord takes it away. Like we see with Srila Prabhupada. If we read the Leelamrita, he mentions that he was, in his astrology, it was mentioned that he would become one of the leading businessmen of India. And since he got the instruction from his Guru Maharaj to preach Krishna consciousness in the West, every attempt at his business endeavors all failed. All of them were just failing, one after the other. And he was like a poor man. And then even his, like, once his wife traded off his Bhagavatam for tea bags, and then he got angry, and then he told his wife, do you want me or tea? And his wife said, I want tea. And he said, okay, see you later. So he actually saw that as the arrangement of the Lord. So advanced devotees, they see everything, he saw that as the arrangement of the Lord to become detached and take up sannyas and preach in the way Krishna wanted him to. So Krishna wanted Prabhupada to flow to America at a later age and with nothing and be fully dependent on the Lord. And in that way the devotee becomes more glorious when they actually take shelter of the Lord. So are there any questions or comments?
Actually, in the Vedanta, in his astrology, the astrologer predicted that he lived in 100 main temples at age 70.
And that happened. Yeah, astrologer predicted that. He also predicted he would be one of the leading businessmen in India. Yeah, but that didn't happen. But still he was very rich, you know. Prabhupada had later he had so many temples. That's a lot of real estate and so many followers. So he got something even more, materially speaking. And Prabhupada would say, you know, now I stay in so many palaces. Like this temple is like a palace. So it's very opulent. It's full.
So sir, my servants are from England.
Yeah, he said, yeah. Because the Indians are subservient to the English, and here all the English are actually, you know, serving Prabhupada, like a menial servant. So this is like, who would do that, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
The Sanskrit or the English?
Sanskrit.
Yasyaham anugrinami. Harishya tad dhanam shanay tato adhanam tejanti asya sejana dukha dukhidam. Personality of God said, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty stricken man abandon him. In this way he suffers one distress after another. Yeah, be prepared. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki.